Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight Podcast, where we interview the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and give you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Sheth. My guest today is Seemi Khan, Chief Medical Officer of Alkeus Pharma, a company that is looking to bring us our first therapeutic for Stargardt disease. In our conversation, we discuss Seemi's background, including her past stints at companies like Abbott and AbbVie, and how her experience bringing rare disease treatments to patients has prepared her to help us meet this huge unmet need in retina. We touch on the clinical trial programs at Alkeus and the impressive data from their lead molecule, ALK-001. I'm thrilled to be able to give our listeners some new insights from a true leader in our field. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Seemi Khan.
Seemi, welcome to the show. I really want to thank you for taking the time today out of your busy schedule. I wanted to give our listeners the opportunity to get to know you a little bit. You know, what you are doing at Alkeus and the great work you're doing on behalf of our patients with Stargardt disease. And so first, welcome to the show. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today. As an introduction to myself, I would just say that it's been almost 17 years since I've been in pharmaceutical industry. What brought me to this industry is just like a passion to learn more and be curious and having a scientific background. So I'm a nephrologist by training. I got trained at Tufts in Boston, and then my first pharma was Abbott, which became AbbVie later. And after that, I went to another West Coast company called Quark Pharmaceutical, then Mitsubishi Tanabe, Riara just prior to coming here, and I've been at Alkeus since January this year. So I'm relatively new to the company. Right now,
I'll interject there. So I think it's an important point. So you're relatively new to the company, but you're not relatively new to rare diseases. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
But I think that's an important point, right? Because yeah. I think being new to ophthalmology and retina is one thing, but I think with what you're doing, I think that background really is important. So tell us a little bit about that.
I work in multiple therapeutic areas and a lot in the rare disease area. So prior to coming to appear, the condition called Alport syndrome in nephrology, and the Friedreich ataxia, which is neurodegenerative disease, and Sjogren's syndrome, lupus, delayed graft function, and quite a few other, this very small rare disease area. It's very interesting. Rare disease area and the development is a specialty in itself. So right now, since I have joined Alkeus, I've been working with Stargardt disease. And so if I just tell a little bit about the company, just to provide you a little bit of background, it's very unique. I've never heard anything like this before. The company was started by two co-founders, one from Columbia, Professor Washington, and our CEO, Vineet Saad. It's almost in 2010 when the company came into existence. And they had the molecule, which is called right now gilteretinol. And it is very, very interesting that it is gilteretinol acetate is a vitamin A. It's enriched with deuterium of carbon at number 20. So with the invention of the molecule, the company came into being in 2010. And since then, they have gone into two major therapeutic area or two indication. So first is the Stargardt disease, where the studies were started. And later, they also started an additional indication. The studies for additional indication, which is the GA and secondary to AMD.
Yeah, so I think this is fantastic, because I think... one, you're talking about two different indications. One, GA obviously is a very common issue, and we're talking a lot more about it now because we have, for once, two kind of FDA approved therapies for that. And so it's exciting that you're working on that, because we have a lot of patients that need treatment for that. I think for the Stargardt's is important too, because we have, again, nothing. So tell us a little bit about, the molecule, maybe the mechanism of action, because I think For those of us that are using treatments for GA, for example, we know this is kind of using the complement pathway and addressing the complement pathway. But what you guys are doing is a little bit different. So I'd love for the listeners to get to understand a little bit about how this might be a little different from what we're used to hearing.
Gilderetinol acetate, it's a vitamin A acetate. It is just enriched with deuterium at carbon number 20. And deuterium, as we know, is a naturally occurring isotope of hydrogen, and which has one proton, one electron, and one neutron. So the specific deuterium enrichment at carbon 20, as I mentioned, it did not alter the metabolism, pharmacokinetics, or pharmacology of vitamin A. And so it's very interesting that overall the cycle, the metabolism is very similar to vitamin A in the body. However, in the visual cycle, it reduces their dimerization, which is one of the mechanism of the disease because there is an increased dimers, and because of the genetic defect, these dimers just accumulates later, just causing the deposition of the drusen and local injury and loss of photoreceptors, followed by all the atrophy and the damage to the retina. So it is so interesting that in the rest of the body, this molecule, the gilderetinol, it acts exactly the same. So you do not expect any off-target effects or any side effects. Yet in the visual cycle, it reduces the dimerization. So the accumulation of the dimers is reduced overall.
So is this treatment given systemically or locally then?
It's an oral, which is
Great.
systemic.
Perfect.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's
Yeah.
great for Stargardt, but also for GA patients as well, right? So tell us about, so in the Stargardt study, you looked at younger patients, right? And I think it's important to kind of distinguish, because obviously in GA, we know the patient population and that, but tell us a little bit about the patient population you looked at in particular, I think in that phase two study that you did, and why that might be important in terms of, is it important to get to these patients at a certain point in their disease state?
Yeah. So for any genetic disease, it is well known, whether it's neurodegenerative or other therapeutic area, it is well known that if you just reach at an earlier point, you are most likely going to have more impact on the disease, either halting the progression or at least slowing the progression of the disease. It's a TEAS protocol. One protocol within that, we have four studies. So TEAS one, these were the advanced Stargardt disease patients, where they started when they enrolled in the program, they had some degree of atrophy. So they have the atrophic lesion based on the FAF. And they were followed over 2 years. Result of that study has been presented last year at AAO. And so that's one, and that is certainly showed compared to the placebo, there is a slowing of the progression of the disease, and that was statistically significant. So that's one study. Then after that, the thought process was like just you mentioned, that if we treat these early, before the development of any atrophic lesion, would that those patients will get more benefit? So that study, what we call is TEAS two, these are moderately advanced patients, and they have some clinical symptomatology when they entered into the study, and also the maculopathy based on the FAF or OCT. And so in that study, that is like double-blind placebo control, which is on currently ongoing, and we anticipate by the end of this year that we will be having the completion of that study, and we anticipate the results of that next year, early next year. The third study, which we recently presented at ARVO, was actually very early patients where they didn't have any symptomatology, but the way they were identified is that they have the older sibling present who presented with the disease, and they were just asked if they have a younger siblings present and if they are interested in doing the genetic testing. So we have very early patients in those studies. That's an open label study. Right now, we have presented the data on three patients, which have more than 4 years of data. And it is very interesting that based on the OCT and also the FAF, the photography of the FAF images of those patients, we did not see any progression of the disease. Yet when their older siblings were of the same age, so we had the historical data collected from their older sibling, who are just serving their control of these patients at the moment.
Well, absolutely. And it's you're, you know, with this disease in particular, you do want to get it at that stage, right? You don't want the patients to be symptomatic, because we know then they're too late. It's just like with our geographic atrophy patients. And I think so this is a really unique aspect. So you mentioned three of the four. So what was the fourth part of that study?
So the fourth one is an open label extension. So just like in any other clinical development plan, you programmed, you probably have seen it, that once the patients finish the double blind placebo control. So two of these are double blind placebo control, which I mentioned, the TEASE-1 and TEASE-2. When they finish, they are offered to enter into the open label extension. So what that does is that serves you the safety data over time, and over a longer period of time, you follow up these patients. And also the TEASE-3, these patients, once they finish, they rolled over to that TEASE-4 as well.
And I'm sure they're eager to roll into the extension as well, right? Without really any
Yes.
other options, and with them seeing kind of the benefits of these treatments. I mean, these are the patients that are probably most excited about enrolling in clinical trials or remaining in clinical trials in this scenario, I suppose. So that's
No, that's
fantastic.
for sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's for sure. And we have seen it in other therapeutic areas as well, in rare disease areas where there's absolutely no other treatment. These patients are very keen to roll over, unless some very personal reason they are just moving out of country or state or town, you know. But we have always seen a great majority of them roll over. And we also just entering into this study some naive patients as well, treatment naive, who's not the part of any of those three studies previously.
And then are you still enrolling for these studies?
Yes, we are for TEASE-3 and TEASE-4. We are
Okay.
still enrolling, but TEASE-2 have finished its enrollment.
Yeah. And if we can, well, maybe we'll link to any information you have on the trials in case there are people listening that would like to learn more about them or potentially enroll or learn about a site that might be enrolling for it. So we'll do that for sure. So tell us a little bit about so in GA, I think what you're seeing is slowing down of the growth rate. What are you seeing in the Stargardt data, in the phase two data that you're seeing so far? What type of slowdown are you noticing?
So in the TEASE-2 data, which is still ongoing, we do not know because it's still blinded data. In TEASE-1, we have just certainly seen there is a slowing of the growth rate, which is 21% slower than the placebo.
That's fantastic. I mean,
Yeah.
you know, from something where we have no options at the moment to be able to slow things down. That's
Yes.
amazing.
And
So
those are the patients which were advanced. They already had a baseline
that's right.
atrophic lesions, while the patients which I mentioned, yes, the number is small, but it's very interesting that no progression over 4 and 6 years time frame.
I definitely think that's a unique aspect, especially for those of us that are involved in clinical trials and tend to, again, enroll patients that have, you know, active or end stage disease. It's nice to see, you know, finally trials that are looking at addressing these issues early on, because again, we know that this is where the most impact happens in terms of keeping a patient seeing, keeping them independent, and you know, potentially preventing some of these things that we see in later stages of the disease. So I applaud you guys on looking at it. It's not always the easiest population to enroll for, and to manage and over time, especially with kids. I mean, things happen with kids, and it's difficult to sometimes keep track of them. They move and things like that, and so it's a difficult task. But I applaud you guys for doing that and looking at that group in particular. So
And
what
one
is?
of the, oh, I'm sorry, yeah, go
Go
ahead.
ahead.
No, one of the interesting aspects is that in all my entire career, any drug that we all work on have significant number of side effects, you know, like we always just say that. This is so amazing because with this drug, you can think of that because you can have either the hypervitaminosis if you are just taking on the top of the regular routine dietary habits, so you are just giving on a daily basis, or hypo if it is replacing the vitamin A pool, but then it's not acting as a full vitamin A. So we keep that in mind. However, surprisingly, that we have not seen any safety signals thus far. So, which is like such an important aspect, especially when you are just going into a younger population, and especially when something is lifelong treatment. So that is like very intriguing and very interesting for me, and you just feel very comfortable with the drug that when you look at the safety profile.
Yeah,
However, certainly
I think
continue
more
to.
it's more important than ever in terms of safety, right? And in a field like ours, where we have seen some safety signal issues with treatments even after post-approval, we're kind of hyper aware of the safety side of things. Efficacy always is very important, but I would say safety is equally important in 2024. And so, yeah, I agree. I mean, to have something systemic like that, and you mentioned it's great and comforting in a young population, but even in an old population where they're already on other systemic medications and you worry about interactions and things like that, any of these systemic trials that we do, we worry about those things as well. And so to see something that is relatively safe and, like you said, it's physiologic to some extent, right? I mean, we're just supplementing with vitamin A, which we
It
get one
is.
way or the other. And you said systemically, this version of vitamin A is really no different, and not metabolized differently systemically than our standard vitamin A, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So let me ask you then. So what is the plan then? So you have some phase two data now. What is the plan moving forward? When can our kind of, community start to look forward to more information and potentially, the next steps for this?
So certainly, because given this is a rare disease, it's an orphan indication, we have really good data based on the TEASE-1 study and also recently what I mentioned about the TEASE-3 study, which we presented. We are planning to, and we are in the process of preparing the NDA, and which we anticipate to file later this year. And very much depends later how the FDA review it, and we'll take it from there. In the meanwhile, our TEASE-2 study is currently ongoing, and which we are anticipating that it will conclude at the end of the year, and the result with the Q1 next year. So we are excited about the results, and we are just aiming to file later this year.
That's fantastic. And that's one of the main reasons I wanted to have you guys on, because you guys are making progress, right? You're making progress not only in a disease state where so far there hasn't been much progress, but it's tangible and it feels like it's not too far in the future, right? And I think
Yeah.
that's the exciting part about it for sure. And we want to make sure it's on our listeners' radar because, right now when these patients come into our office, it's tough, right? They ask us, doc, what can you do? And a lot of these patients, they're coming in every 6 months, every year, and you're just watching them get worse over time. And so to be able to give them a little bit of hope, and say, look, there are, great companies like yours and great people like you working on treatments for them, I think it gives them hope. And so hopefully, this kind of allows more people to learn a little bit more about it, ask more questions, and hopefully, a year from now, we're talking about something that's really, close to getting to our patients worldwide. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. And our two founders, Lynnette Saad, who's our CEO, and A.S. Washington, who has done a great work and brought the company to this point, where we are rapidly growing in number. They not only got the orphan designation, which one can expect based on the number of the patients in this population, but also the breakthrough designation, which is very, very important. Very few drugs in ophthalmology division get the breakthrough designation. So we anticipate our review process would be based on those milestones, which are related with the breakthrough designation.
Yeah, that's incredibly important. And so,
Yeah.
yeah, hopefully, everything goes smoothly and we'll have again, something for our patients that we currently, is such a huge unmet need. So thank you for doing that work.
Yeah, that's
So,
very rewarding to see that anything coming for these patient population, like in any area, but it's rewarding when something is not there and you would be the first to bring that, you know.
yeah, and you've had a lot of experience in that arena, right? Getting things that are, getting them to market for people that otherwise have not many options. And so I think that's good that Alkeus has brought you on because of that background. And I think it's important to understand how to navigate those things.
Yes, it is. It is very interesting.
Well, Simi, I want to thank you for your time today. I think this is really important for our listeners to kind of understand what's being done in this space. And again, I think you coming on and shining a light on it has been incredibly helpful. So I want to really thank you for that. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me there. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening in to the New Insight podcast. We really appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listening or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Dr. Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.